Thank you for the introduction. Good morning. It is extremely difficult to speak after Vandana Shiva's introduction because it was not an introduction. It was a tour d'horizon of all the problems we have, and I am now digging into one facet only, which is the connection of climate change and biodiversity. And you may have all read what I believe is the strongest sentence in the fourth assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It connects biodiversity and climate change. This sentence says the following: without climate protection, 20 to 30% of all known species on this planet are close to extinction at the end of the 21st century. This is an extremely strong sentence, and I realize in my own country that now the conservative groups are asking me more often to speak to them than earlier the Social Democrats or the Greens, because those engaged in environmental protection since a long time, especially in southern Germany, were wealthy citizens, were protecting plants in the 50s and 60s. This movement is much stronger than in other parts of my country, and so they are now very afraid of losing what they call die Schöpfung. And maybe the translators know the English word better, but it is, I know, creation has not the full same meaning as Schöpfung in German. It's very difficult to translate this word. Now let me go to what I know best, natural science facts. I'm a physicist, and typically nearly all engaged in some topic by their hearts forget about the physical constraints. The physical constraints, for example, for fuels from crops is a simple number. On global scale, on average, only 0.1 watts per square meter are fixed by plants. And the sun delivers 170 watts per square meter. So only a tiny part of the available energy is going into biomass. And we take from this 0.1 watts per square meter, it rises to 0.5 for sugarcane and 0.3 for maize watts per square meter. What we take normally for food is again a small portion. So our throughput in energy density in watts per square meter is absolutely negligible compared to the offer by the sun. But our industrial system has now reached already 0.03 watts per square meter for our energy system, which is still comparably negligible to what the sun delivers. But it is already a third of the entire production of biomass on this globe, including phytoplankton in the oceans. So if we would try to get our energy system run by biomass, we would need, with 100% efficiency, already a third of all the production on this planet. This is absolutely impossible, or in other words, we cannot go into the energy system just by biomass use. This is, from the beginning on, a dead-end road. And this has to be recognized before we start all these massive lawmaking in certain countries. And I saw in television this morning the handshake between the Brazilian president and our chancellor, and she tried to keep up the signal environmentally sound, and it was torn down by the president because he said, no, we have a different view on this. And yesterday when I spoke at a side event here at the COP MOP4, a Brazilian delegate came to me and advertised that there is no single monoculture of sugarcane in Brazil. Because a monoculture would be the entire country grows only sugarcane. This was her definition of a monoculture. Yeah, you see how difficult the debate is already. Now to the greenhouse gases emitted by agriculture. Since a very long time, organic farming emits greenhouse gases as well, but this was part of a natural, rather balanced system. And now the system is no longer balanced in agriculture because we use fertilizers, we use herbicides, insecticides, or generally pesticides, and they all need a lot of energy before they are produced. So any farming, including organic farming, emits greenhouse gases, but organic farming emits much less if the recycling is done properly. There's always an if. Let's now go down the list. What is the main contribution of agriculture to the enhanced greenhouse effect on this globe? It is methane emission from rice paddies and from animal husbandry, mainly from raising cattle. But there are practices with very low emissions. For example, concerning rice, the Italians are the world leaders concerning the minimization of methane emission from rice because they do not have rice paddies. They only flush their system once at the beginning and then let it grow because we are living in an area in northern Italy where sometimes some rain is falling even in summer. So there is no real dry season, and many rice growing areas could do the same, and then the methane emissions would be gone nearly completely. It's from rice paddies. The flooding of the fields is the reason for the methane emission. And cattle, it is mainly tied to eating meat and drinking milk. There are cultures on our globe needing nearly no meat and no milk, and they are rather clean concerning methane emissions. While we here in Germany, I'm taking my own country as a bad example, we need huge areas worldwide to feed our pigs. So soybean and other foodstuff has to be imported. And even when we talk about virtual water, there's more water flowing up the River Elbe than flowing down because we have a harbor called Hamburg. And all the bananas and all the other food coming into Germany is, in terms of virtual water, what you have needed to produce it, stronger than the River Elbe. And so we have massive redirections of fluxes on our globe due to global trade. And even we are in similar or in the same order of magnitude now for water. We are above the natural cycle in nitrogen. So what we transport around on our globe concerning nitrogen compounds is higher than the nature ever did. So we are dominating the nitrogen cycle. We are dominating the sulfur cycle. We are strongly distorting the carbon cycle, and we are already changing the water cycle on this globe. Next after methane is nitrous oxide, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. Only 0.3 parts per million by volume in the atmosphere are nitrous oxide. But it lives approximately 120 years before its concentration is down to 1 over E, which is roughly 37%. It's the definition of by physicists of the lifetime of a substance. If we would not emit tomorrow any nitrous oxide, we had to wait 120 years to these a concentration down to 37%. And per kilogram, it's 310 times as important as a greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide. So if you now produce biodiesel, for example, in Germany, the fertilizers needed, the nitrogen fertilizers needed to produce it, would lead to an emission of nitrous oxide, which totally offsets the carbon dioxide reduction, because you do no longer use diesel, but you use bio or agro diesel. And so this full compensation has never been accounted for in all the lawmaking until recently. Now the scientists have argued, especially Paul Crutzen, the Nobel Prize winner for chemistry from 1995, he made a calculation how bad such systems are concerning climate protection, for which they have been introduced. It's very strange. This audience is biased in a positive kind or a positive way. There are many among you shying away from such climate protection measures, taking biomass as the hope for calming down or dampening the increased greenhouse effect. Number three is carbon dioxide itself. And carbon dioxide from agriculture, it's mainly using tractors, but most people do not think about fertilizers. The energy needed to produce nitrogen fertilizers is huge. So first comes fertilizers, then come tractors, and then the pesticides. Their production is also very energy consuming. So agriculture at the same time is one of the first victims of climate change. And there is one image in the Working Group 1 report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which shows the potential redistribution of water on our globe due to climate change at the end of the 21st century for moderate scenarios. So slightly more than doubling the carbon dioxide content until the end of this century. And it says, and I say it first in German, wer hat, kriegt etwas dazu. Wer Mangel hat, kriegt nochmal genommen. Who has enough water gets in addition. The high latitudes, for example, and the innermost tropics. Who has water scarcity already gets something taken away, 10, 15, 20%, which would mean you have to move. Migration will be a major outcome of unabated climate change, and it will hit the small farmers in the subtropical and outer tropical semi-arid areas. They get less. And this is an agreement of 16 to 20 different coupled ocean atmosphere land models, so-called climate models. Now, let's go to mitigation measures. You can already feel what I would argue first. Go back to organic farming. This is the best remedy. It has started in industrialized countries, but if you look to the yield of smallholders in subtropical areas and compare it to the yield of an organic farm nearby, run in full recycling of material, then organic farming has higher yields. While in our areas, it's the opposite, because we are shifting responsibility to next generations. And under such condition, we arrive at very high yields at present per hectare, but with a massive input and a long tail of problems coming over the next centuries. And if you look to sea level rise, it will not be stopped in 300 years, even after massive climate protection policies. Because if you trigger the melting of a big ice shield on this globe, it will melt over thousands of years until trying to get into a new equilibrium state. Normally, these ice shields needed about 10,000 years for melting away. 20,000 years ago, there was no North Sea. It was land. We had a sea level 120 meters higher than today. Because 120 meters of ice have melted from 20,000 before present to 10,000 before present. And since 10,000 before present to today, it's only a few meters additional melting. And now the ocean is rising by 3 millimeters per year. And not because of the melting, as normally people would say. The main contribution to sea level rise is warming ocean waters. And they expand. They get a bit warmer in the uppermost layers, and this has given about 60% of these 3 millimeters per year. Another mitigation measure. Rice, like in Italy, as I said earlier. But it is easier said than done. Why can they do it this way with nearly no methane emissions? Because they work against weeds with pesticides. While a rice paddy is a natural, nice protection against weeds becoming dominant. So there's always another side of the coin. So it's not easy to give simple solutions. Less meat in our countries would be very good for our health. But it is not done. And maybe as Vandana Shiva said, sometimes political changes bring success stories we could not dream of. For example, concerning climate change, the biggest climate protection ever was the collapse of the Soviet Union. Because over about 15 years, the increase in emissions of carbon dioxide was down to about 1%. And now rises again with about 3% per year because the economies in the former Soviet Union have recovered and have got to speed again. So Mikhail Gorbachev is the strongest inadvertent climate protector. Because his socialist economy was replaced in parts by a market economy using energy a bit more efficient than the socialist economy. I have to come to an end concerning mitigation. I'm giving advice to the Bavarian government because they wanted this advice just because of this famous sentence I mentioned before. They have now a so-called climate council for the government. And our advice was never do an adaptation measure without a mitigation component. So you have to search for such measures where you protect at the same time when you adapt to climate change. In agriculture, this is easy. But let's speak about one of the most stupid reactions. It happened in Germany. We had no snow in 2006 to 2007 in winter, but we had a World Cup race in biathlon in the forests of Thuringia. And there was no single gram of snow. What have they done? They ordered ice from a factory in Bremerhaven, which normally produces ice for the fish industry. And every night, six very big trucks with grinded ice went from Bremerhaven to Oberhof in Thuringia to keep a very small track for the biathlon World Cup alive. It was a very dirty snow. It looked very ugly. But this is adaptation to climate change of the worst manner. Now to a conclusion, and it was in parts already indicated also by Vandana Shiva. What is the best way to go forward? We have to implement the conventions. This is no stupid text, the Biodiversity Convention, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It's the only text to which all governments, or nearly all governments, obey. And why don't we have an assessment body for biodiversity questions? We have a roster of experts. I was laughing yesterday when I saw this document at COPMOP, what they are doing to get scientific advice. A roster of experts. You need an intergovernmental panel. This is the only way to get the high-ranked scientists from all colors into one group. And if you are inside such a group, I was from the beginning in IPCC, then you lose your blinders. Everybody is full of preoccupations. And if you are confronted with the best scientists of the world in a field like climate change or biodiversity loss, then you realize how strange your views sometimes have been, and you lose it. And finally, you can agree on some known facts, best judgments, or unknown or unanswered questions. And then you write it down, and this is the basis for action. That's why the Climate Convention always got the push after each publication of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And I'm arguing for a joint activity now, bringing both conventions through an assessment body together. Just looking at where does biodiversity loss and climate change, where do they meet, and how can we take measures not hurting the other. At present, biogas power plants in Germany, using mainly maize plus remnants from agriculture are one of the most effective ways to use biomass for energetic purposes. But at the same time, this is pressure, again, on our landscapes. And it is not sufficient to have 5, 10, or 15% of a country under protection. The diversity of our landscapes is the point we have to make. We need very diverse, normal landscapes outside protected areas. Not only these 10 or 15% with protection, and no plant is able to hop from southern Germany to northern Germany during climate change if it is growing in a forest, because there are no forests over large distances. How should they move? How should they go? And look at our forests in Germany. We have very low biological diversity in Central European forests, because the 10,000 years of melting glaciers have forced our forests to go every 100,000 years from Riviera to the North Cape and back. And the most massive move was in 10,000 years from the Riviera to the North Cape. Only very few trees survived under such conditions. In Eastern Asia, where the Ice Age was not as dominant as here, you have in mid-latitude climates like ours about 2 to 250 native tree species. And in Germany, we have 32 or 36, depending on how you calculate. A small school child can learn it by heart in the first year. We have low diversity in trees because natural variability was against high diversity. And in 10,000 years, we had an increase of temperatures on global scale of 4 to 5 degrees. And now we pack 2 to 3 or 4 degrees, depending on our behavior, into one century. This must be too much for a natural progression of diversity. With this comment, I would like to end. Please help to dampen climate change as well as you try to keep up biodiversity. Both are very strongly connected to each other. Thank you.